The date is November 24th, 1994, and we're watching The Page Master. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the fantasy to my adventure.
Is that racist? Hello, I'm Colin Stewart.
It's either that or sexist, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, here we are with our final movie of Kulkvember, bringing it home strong, might be a question mark. I don't know, but we have a guest here that we promised we would watch this movie with because Colin had said it was one of his favorites, and this guest had never seen it, so please welcome back. It's been a minute. It's been way too long since we've seen him on our show, at least. Please welcome back Mr. Michael Ross.
Hello. So does that mean I'm horror, or could I just
you
say
are...
I'm romance? I'm adding a new genre in here.
There were no Harlequin romance novels or anything. Like are you going like smutty romance? Like
oh,
all
yeah,
the way?
Bodice ripping. Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Fabio on the cover shirtless. Okay. Outstanding. Yep. Yeah. I was going to say you are the horror. I mean, Frank Welker, that's not too shabby of a person to be compared to. He's a great voice artist. So, well, yes, welcome to Kulkvember, Michael. This is we've done all Macaulay Culkin this month, and so that's how we worked you in here. It was back on our last episode, though, that you had said that you've never seen this movie, correct?
Never heard of it. I didn't know it existed.
Okay, well, we'll talk to you a bit more about that in a second. This week, we are looking back at November 1994, when the movies in theaters were Junior, How the West Was Fun, Star Trek Generations, which I find hilarious because of the amount of people from that movie that are in this movie, Leon the Professional, let's throw another one at you, it's November, it's getting close to Christmas, Miracle on 34th Street was also out, and of course, our movie for today, The Page Master, which earned... $13.67 million on a $27 million budget. Ouch. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I guess there was like a lot of animation. I'm shocked that the budget was that much, but it was a different time, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you've got your $8 million man, Macaulay Culkin, in that movie, as we discovered with Richie Rich. You know, he's a heavy earner by the time Pagemaster comes out. And this is out just before Richie Rich. So, I mean, it was a big year for Macaulay Culkin in 94.
Nice. Well, yeah. There are going to be spoilers ahead, so don't drop your panties. Go watch the movie and then come back and hear what we have to say.
Okay, well, yeah, interestingly, this movie is 29 years old yesterday.
Nice.
Like, if you're listening to this on the day of release, yes, yesterday was the 29th anniversary of this classic, of this literary classic, perhaps. Well, I found only one tagline for this movie this week. I mean, it kind of ironic that something that focuses so much on books can't write more than one tagline, but here we go. Only one. All the adventure your imagination can hold.
I guess it's fine. It's serviceable.
You gotta feel bad for fantasy and horror if that's all the adventure your imagination can hold. Like, what about those other guys? No room for them. No, Michael is just shaking and making faces. He's pulling faces for this audio podcast.
I feel like I talk too much on your show, so I'm trying to rein myself in so that I'm adding color commentary today. I don't want to take too much of control. Plus, this is a movie that Colin loves, and we have a history, and I don't want to come out too strong either way, but certainly not opposed.
I'm going to say off the bat, Michael, that while I do have a fond history of this movie, things may have changed. So don't feel
spoiler
like you need to
alert.
Spare
yeah,
my
yeah.
feelings.
Yeah. No, I mean, don't worry, Michael. We love getting into the weeds. We don't mind if we have you around for 2 hours if you've got that in you, because, you know, we love talking to you. So,
well, I would argue that this conversation should not be longer than the movie.
Okay.
Which is not actually a movie because it's only 70 minutes long, and feature films are supposed to be 85. So it says it's an hour and 20, but that's a lie. It was actually, I think I clocked in at 73 minutes. And so by word written, this is actually a massive success. Don't look at the budget, look at how many words were said, how short this movie is. And I think the ratio of money brought into that's pretty substantial.
Okay. Well, that's fair. Well, okay, we've got a tagline, but we don't have very much description of this movie, so let's go to Colin and get a 60-second synopsis.
Cult-member. Oh, man, this is a sad one.
Oh, no. Colin's childhood ended.
Richard Rich. Correction. Richard Tyler. Wrong movie. Is a timid, safety-conscious boy who takes great solace in statistics in order to protect himself from unfavorable outcomes. Richard's dad decides to build the son a treehouse against his wishes in the hopes that Richard will one day overcome his fears to experience the joys that come from overcoming one's fears and allowing a little risk into his life. After Richie almost kills his dad with a bucket of nails, he's sent to the hardware store to fetch more nails. On the way, a storm blows in and Richie is forced to take refuge in the local library. After meeting the mysterious librarian and getting a library card, Richie slips on the floor and passes out. When he wakes up, the library appears to be closed, but the place starts to melt, and Richie is plunged into a cartoon world where he befriends three anthropomorphic books named Fantasy, Adventure, and Horror. Richard and the three books go on adventure through the public domain, running from monsters, outmaneuvering pirates, and fighting dragons in order to make it to the exit, where Richard is promised to check out all three books. When they reach the end, Richie meets the page master, who explains he orchestrated the whole thing for Richie's personal development. A new boy emerges from the library, Richard the Dragon Slayer, who rides home, does sweet jumps on his bike, and makes that treehouse his bitch. There you go.
Ah, he sure does.
Cult-member.
So, the page master. I barely remember the page master. It's one of those movies that when I was younger, I mean, when this came out, I was already in high school. I was not quite the demographic anymore, but I think I saw it once. So I have at least a history where at least I'm aware of this movie and I know what it was and, you know, kind of had some plot points, but I'm not 100% sure if I ever actually saw it when I was younger. I mean, this is pretty much Colin's party. I mean, Michael, do you have anything else you want to say on your history with this, or, you know, of just like not even knowing about it, or like...
Yeah, I literally no knowledge whatsoever. When you told me the name, I immediately Googled it and I was like, oh, maybe. But then once I actually read the description and once I started today, when I started watching it, like, no, I have never seen a moment of this. And this came out, you said 1994 in November. So I would have been 19. Yeah. I'm an old man. So I was definitely not the demographic for this movie.
Yeah. Okay. You're less so than I was.
Me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Now here's the question though, because it is Cult-vember.
Cult-vember.
What is your history with the man, the myth, the legend, Macaulay Culkin? Are you a follower of him at all?
I mean, I don't have like a strong opinion one way or the other. I mean, Home Alone was a hit. Like, I watched that movie a bunch. My kids still watch those movies. They think they're hilarious, so I've watched those a lot. I mean, I don't, like, I know as he grew up, you know, obviously that much success that early, he's done some weird things, but he seems like he's a pretty nice person, all things considered. Yeah. I have no strong negative or positive.
Okay. Yeah. So you just, he's the Home Alone kid and that's about it maybe for you. Or yeah, Uncle Buck, you probably know Uncle Buck.
I've seen that, like, that thing with John Candy where he goes all the questions. Like, I'm sure I watched Uncle Buck at least once, but it wasn't like a strong memory for me either. And then what was the other one? My Girl. Like when he kicks the wasp nest or whatever, you know, that was a whole thing.
Yeah. In 94 alone, he had this one, Richie Rich, and also Getting Even with Dad, which is a Ted Danson movie.
Never heard of that one either.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there we go. Yeah. And then he took a 9-year hiatus after Richie Rich. So, Yeah, he fell off the map for a while there. Well, okay, Colin, why are we here? This is your party. So tell me about your history with the Pagemaster.
My history with the Page. All right, so
history. Yeah. I know your opinion may have changed.
Loved this movie when I was a kid, as has been established. Big Macaulay Culkin fan. He was like right in my wheelhouse as a, you know, like an elementary school child back in the day. This movie, though, in particular, I remember loving because I had the VHS, and in a time before YouTube, it was like, you know, even VHS trailers mattered, like the trailers that would come before a movie on a DVD or a VHS at this time mattered. Yeah. And this VHS tape came with like a 5-minute preview of the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers movie.
Mm.
And I probably watched it and rewound that 5 minutes like 10 times per watch of this movie.
Okay.
And so
It's the YouTube of the 90s. You know, it's like you had to rewind that tape if you wanted to watch it more than once. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think that, like, obviously, as is also well established, I think by now in this podcast, I'm a massive, like, fan of the Power Rangers. And I think that those positive vibes from watching that 5-minute preview then primed me to, like, enjoy this movie.
took you in.
Transitive properties of, you know, it's like, you like this movie because of that association.
But to Michael's, Michael's point about it, it is only 73 minutes. That's, I ended up buying it on like Google Play and it's an hour 13. I remember this movie being so much longer when I was a kid.
It is not long at all.
No.
It does feel long in parts, I'll tell you. I will say that if I had watched this at the right age, I would have loved this movie. This is a movie that was made for me as a kid. I was that kid who loved going to the library. There's actually one part I think is kind of funny right at the end. Like in my grade school, you could only check out 2 books at a time. I was allowed to check out 3 because I would read them so fast they would allow me. So I was that nerd kid who got special privileges at the library. I loved going to the library as a kid. I had a library card from a very young age. So like the idea of the library being this sort of portal to another world, I'm there. Sign me up 100%. You know, it coincides with my love of like role playing games and fantasy worlds and all that stuff. So 100%, if this had hit me at the right age, I would probably have a Pagemaster tattoo. But unfortunately, 48 years old, watching it for the first time, it's pretty bad.
Well, and I know that in our initial discussion where this came up in our last episode that we did with you, Colin thought it was right in your wheelhouse because of that same aspect. So I can see why, as a kid, this would have hit you in the right places. And so, I can totally see that. And
I do appreciate you saying hit, not touched, because that's a completely different type of story.
Well, let's jump into the Pagemaster directed. And so we've got the animation director. I have no idea how to pronounce this. Pixote? Pixote. But in this one, he goes by Maurice, so it doesn't really matter. Maurice Hunt. And he's the animation director, and the live action director is Joe Johnson, who we spoke about with The Rocketeer, and he's director of Captain America, First Avenger, and stuff like that. He's got some Mighty Joe Young, I think, is one of his. Yeah. Produced by Paul Gertz, Michael R. Joyce, and David Kirshner, and written by David Kirshner, David Kasky, and Ernie Contreras. Yeah, we open this movie with animated cloud openings, and we see fire-breathing dragons, and we think, okay, we're in for an action adventure. Would you say that maybe this is the never-ending story of the 90s, just not done as well as the never-ending story?
So, like, there was a movie, I thought it was a never-ending story, but I remember there was another movie that we kind of talked about where it, like, wasn't what... It wasn't for me, but it was you, Sean, who was like, this wasn't what I remembered. Like, you remembered it being more, like, grandiose. And I was trying to remember if that was the never-ending story where it just didn't, like, hold up as well.
I do remember that about the never-ending story. I probably said that about a couple movies on this podcast. But, yeah, no, I it might have been the never-ending story where it's just... Little Monsters was another one where it's like, I just remember it being bigger. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's still my memory of Neverending Story. I haven't watched that in years, but my memory is still that that's like epic and sweeping and sort of grand. And I think comparing them together, my memory of Neverending Story is so much more elevated than Pagemaster, but I can certainly see them in conversation with each other. They are doing a similar sort of thing,
yeah,
but in a different way.
Yeah,
I think one of the key things about the Pagemaster that didn't work for me, which I'm not saying they should have done this, it's the movie it is, but like movies like The Goonies or Explorers, which you were kind enough to watch from a previous appearance, is it's that sort of like Scooby-Doo gang kind of thing. You got a bunch of kids that are working together, and by definition, this kid's kind of a loner. That's kind of his thing, so that's why he uses books, or, you know, while they want him to get into the world of books so that he can have those connections and relationships. But I would have enjoyed this movie had there been some other people there with him. It wouldn't have worked, because that's not what the movie is, but I missed having a group of little kids working together.
Yeah, like the one point where he says, you know, oh no, you're my only friends, when like the two books like disappear, it's like, oh, ouch. That's really sad. Like, that's real sad.
Do you want to get into the cast? I feel like as I was watching the movie, that was the thing I was most struck by, was how good the cast is.
I'm very surprised by the cast. Yeah, let's talk about this cast. No, I hesitated there because I was just trying to figure out what one of my notes said. But yeah, let's do this. So
we have Macaulay Culkin. That's a given.
Yeah.
But we have Patrick Stewart, not the Picard himself.
Yep.
And we have, is this, there must be another movie, another Star Trek movie where Leonard Nimoy and Patrick Stewart have met.
Yeah, well, there was definitely a Next Generation episode.
Yeah,
oh, okay.
Is the Next Generation, Spock is still alive.
Yeah,
he's on there as an ambassador.
I did double check this because of the fact that Star Trek Generations was in theaters at the same time, and that's the one that has some of the old guys come back, and then you have the Next Generation movie. But Whoopi Goldberg shows up as Guinan in that movie, and I'm like, I think Spock is in that movie, but I had to double check, and it's like, no, wait, Spock's not in that movie, but I think he might show up in one of, like, First Contact or something like that. Isn't there a time travel element? I know he shows up in one of the J.J. Abrams Star Treks, but...
Yeah, he's in that one, but that's not with Picard. That's with the new version of Kirk.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
But I believe this was Patrick Stewart's first time as a voice actor, if I read that correctly. Same thing with Whoopi Goldberg. This was her first time as a voice actress.
Yes.
That's kind of a cool detail.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it definitely is. And really, one of the only interesting facts that was in IMDb about this. But yeah, I mean, they, of course, went on to do more animation work. But yeah, and then here we are cutting over, like, just the cast list. Whatever, we're naming everyone anyway, right? Yeah. Because we also got
Ed Begley Jr.
Ed Begley
Frank
Jr.
Welker.
Yeah, we got Frank and Welker. Then, I mean, with all these first-time people, you've got, like, the legend himself, Fred from Scooby-Doo, just to bring it back around to Scooby-Doo. I mean, yeah, if you ever want to, like, trip out on someone's IMDb for how long it is, go look up Frank Welker. He's got, like, 1,000 credits on IMDb.
Half of them are like dog.
Yeah.
Dog barking or animal noises.
Squeaks. Yeah. Yeah.
And then I guess the last main one is Christopher Lloyd, who I swear, like, I watched this behind the scenes special feature on YouTube where it's like interspersed with scenes of him as the librarian throughout it. And I feel like he has more lines in that than he has in the actual movie.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, you know, you say that that's about all you have left to talk about. Phil Hartman is in this movie.
Oh,
yeah,
I didn't notice that.
And Jim Cummings, who is another legendary voice actor, I believe the voice of Winnie the Pooh, if I'm correct, is...
Bother.
Yeah, he's Long John Silver.
Oh, bother.
Yeah, so, yeah, you got them too. So, gotta mention those two as well. Those are a couple of shout-outs. But yeah, I was impressed, and... The funny thing is, you know, in the beginning, you see these names coming up with Patrick Stewart, and it took me about 10 minutes of Adventure being on screen where I go, oh, shit, that's Patrick Stewart.
Yep.
Because finally he said something in a kind of Picard-like way, and I'm like, oh, I see what you're putting on there. Well done, Sir Pat. Well done.
Yeah, it definitely doesn't sound like him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, is that the exaggerated pirate-tease that he's doing?
Absolutely.
That library is not a real place, right? Like, that's part of the fantasy, that because it makes absolutely zero sense that it would be where it is, plus as large as it is. I was confused about that from the beginning. Like, it's...
Like the logistics?
Like the logistics of a library that is that huge in physical space that seems to be somewhat off the road next to a tunnel in the middle of nowhere?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a destination library, I guess.
I guess.
Yeah. You know?
It's like Hogwarts, Library.
Yeah. It's like Blazing Saddles where they move the town a few miles. Right. At one point they had to move the town, but the library was just too big to move, so they're like, "Eh."
Apparently, because that is a huge library. I would love to visit that actual library. I would stay there forever.
It is a nice library. Yeah, I mean, I've been in some nice libraries.
It has its own rotunda. But... You don't get that in every library.
Well, yeah, like Colin said, I mean, Library of Congress, those types of libraries are the ones where it's like, yeah, those are the ones with the big rotundas, but...
Yeah.
But what a creepy librarian to
Oh my
run
God, yes. That kid should have ran away immediately.
Yeah, like his introduction, the fact that he like stares the kid down and like goes towards him, eyes all bugged out, until he's like inches from him before saying anything. It's like, okay, that's a choice.
Why are the lights off? Why are the lights off in the library?
Mm-hmm. Thunderstorm.
It's like you unplug your computer. You don't turn the lights off.
Yeah.
Another sort of connection to my past. I used to work at a library.
Okay.
And there was a period of time where I thought that was going to be my career. And I actually went to college. I started working on a secondary degree in library sciences. I think it was called at the time. I used to work at a library. I used to do circulation. I put the books up. That was a whole thing that I did for a few years. So I absolutely love libraries, again, is the kind of person I am. But if that was the head librarian, I would quit immediately, and I would probably call the police and say, you need to watch this guy.
Well, yeah, and would you be willing to change your name to Mr. Dewey, or would you think that's a little too on the nose?
Yeah, okay. So here's my overall theory on this whole movie.
Okay.
That there was no script. Like, it was like four or five post-it notes that someone had written and just like stuck to the wall, because this is an outline of a movie and then a lot of dialogue.
Yeah.
Because it is just like absolutely everything is surface level. Like the most obvious connections, the most obvious metaphors, and there's no depth to this at all. I think it's a great idea. I think it's terribly executed, but I would love to see the full hour and a half version of this movie that has been written a couple times. Yeah. But every time they did anything, I'm like, well, that's the laziest first idea of that I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I was gonna say the animated stuff, I guess, like people seem into it. But, like, the live action, I couldn't help but just feel like...
It was flat.
Nobody looks like they want to be there. Everybody's just, like, mailing it in. Like, Christopher Lloyd is just, like, the tropiest version of himself that's ever existed. Yeah. Macaulay Culkin is just, like, has no affect, like, no emotion. He's just, doesn't look like he... You can tell he's, like, toward the end, like, he needs to retire.
Is it possible that they decided to add the live-action shit at the last minute, you know? Like, is it possible that they did all the animation and went, oh, man, this is only 60 minutes long. Can we bump that up to at least 73?
But only if we add in a cool bike-jumping stunt scene.
Yeah. We've already got Christopher Lloyd and Macaulay Culkin doing the voices. We can have them come in for a couple days and do some live action stuff. Yeah, we'll just bring Ed Begley Jr. in for a couple hours to do a couple scenes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, now, Colin, here's the question that keeps coming up in Culkvember that we have to ask.
Culkvember.
How's your Home Alone tint on this one?
It's not there. There's no Kevin McAllister here.
Yeah, so
he's nowhere to be seen.
So we've got an anti Kevin McAllister, so that's good. So maybe that's the advantage to the flat performance, is that, well, at least you don't see the kid from Home Alone anymore. Slap some glasses on them. It's Clark Kent and Superman, man.
That's right. I mean, his performance is very dull,
subdued.
There's nothing like, there.
It's the phoning it in, like Colin said. Yeah, it does not feel like he wants to be there. It's a paycheck.
Yeah, it kind of. I don't know. As we've watched like all these Macaulay Culkin movies, I don't know that. I hate to say it, he is kind of just like a one-trick pony.
Yeah.
Like, he's not, he doesn't have a lot of, like, range.
If he doesn't do his trick, it's not quite the same.
I don't want to judge a child for, like, their acting ability. Like, obviously, he was like, a cute kid. But I feel like by this time, it's, like, worn off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, I would actually even say, like, I remember when we watched Home Alone 2, I was less...
The shine was off. Yeah.
The shine had worn off in Home Alone 2 even more than I thought.
Okay, we get it. You're Kevin McAllister. We know what you can do. Yeah, we see it. We see it. We see the strings now.
Yeah, but in this one, I think Michael's right. Like, whether it's his like lack of ability combined with just like a real lack of script and story, it's just like not a lot. There's not a lot this movie has going for it. And honestly, like, even the animation, I was a little like, yeah.
It was like Land Before Time, where it's kind of like, it's not as pretty as I thought it was.
Yeah. Again, it's like dull first draft choices.
Changed colors.
Yeah.
Like,
but again, why horror, fantasy, and adventure? Like, why are those just the only three genres for boys? Yeah. I don't know. That felt lazy to me.
Yeah, it did. Yeah. Now, I want to focus on something positive. I really enjoyed the opening bit, just the introduction to his character, where we find out who this kid is just because of his room. So, you know. Big props to the props department.
Yeah.
Set direction was on point for that one. I enjoyed like the little sight gags of he had the fire extinguisher and in case of fire break glass, and then in case of glass wear these with the boots hanging from the wall. Like, it was just
that was funny.
It was all very funny stuff. Yeah, like so. I want to focus on that. There, like you said, there was a good idea here.
And yeah, maybe I do. I think it's a good idea.
Better performed, maybe a little better written, you know. But there was a fun idea here.
Yeah. I would even say kind of like David Kirshner apparently was the creator of Pirates of Darkwater. I don't know if either of you are familiar with that cartoon.
I remember that cartoon.
That's another one that I have a very strong love for the idea of that show, like because I've wanted to run like a role playing game set in that world, but the actual cartoon is pretty terrible. But I really like the concept, so I'm completely just out of my butt. But it makes me think David Kirshner is like an idea person, like here's my idea, but isn't good at actually like doing the work as far as writing and rewriting. I don't know what other credits he has. Again, this could be complete just I'm like you know libel or slander or whatever it is. But I like the ideas, but
allegedly,
I just would have liked to have seen a couple extra drafts of this before it was filmed.
Yeah, absolutely.
Are you saying that David Kirshner, he wrote this one too?
He's listed as one of the writers for this one.
Yeah, writer and producer on this. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
That makes sense to me. And to go back to the runtime thing that you were talking about, is like this does feel like Saturday morning cartoons in the 1990s.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Like I like Pirates of Dark Water when I was a kid. Like I loved all like Captain Planet, like even the Ninja, but they're all like. With the exception of, I would say, like, kind of the Disney ones, like Gargoyles and, like, Darkwing Duck and those types of ones, those cartoons are tough to go back to and rewatch because they're all like this.
Yeah.
They have just enough story and flash to, like, entertain, like a 6-year-old mind.
Yeah.
But beyond that, they have, like, nothing else. Like, everything is so... just loose and nonsensical, then it's tough for it to hold an adult's mind, let alone like even a teenager's mind.
All splash, no substance. Well, okay, I was going to hold on to this until my final thoughts, but I watched this one with my kids. And okay. I don't often watch my movies with my kids. Most often they're not appropriate, but usually I'm like, shit, why didn't I watch that with my kids when I do actually watch one of these that's appropriate? So I was going to pull this out later and let you know. But yeah, I will say that they thoroughly enjoyed themselves. Mm. It's just all this talk of, you know, Colin with, I loved that when I was a kid, and Michael saying, I don't get it because it wasn't out when you were a kid, right?
Right.
You know, it's like, yeah, the demographic, my 9 and 10 year old really enjoyed this movie, but boy, they didn't get it. All the references were lost on
them. I was going to say, like, I feel like back in the day, I would have barely understood, like I've never read Treasure Island. I think most people know Moby Dick, Jekyll and Hyde.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't have gotten like the Gulliver's Travelers references. Yeah. I don't think either. I remember just thinking, oh, sweet, I can't wait till the dragon comes and I get to see some knights or something.
Yeah, and these days, would you say you're more familiar with something like Gulliver's Travels because of, like, Jack Black's movie? You know? The kids can watch Jack and the Beanstalk, the movie, if they want these days. I mean, yeah. For me, all I had was the Mickey Mouse version.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like... Part of me thinks that this would be a good movie to remake, like, if you expand it, like, put some actual work into the story.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I don't know if it would, because I don't know, the sense I get is, people don't read all that much anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, a movie like Wreck-It Ralph, I love because of all the old video game references.
Yeah.
And kids don't even get that, right? Yeah. And they're all gamers. So it's like, you know, yeah, books, I think, would definitely be lost on them. I'm not sure.
It'd have to be like TikTok, like Fortnite something. I don't
know. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, you'd have to have, like, cameos from Harry Potter and the Twilight vampires and shit, you know?
Sparkly vampires.
Yeah.
I would have liked for them to went a little deeper into the catalog and pick maybe some not just, like, the obvious books. But I guess, to your point, would those references have been lost on other people? But, like, even, like, The Hounds of Baskerville, I doubt 90% of people watching that, other than it being a scary dog sort of thing, would have gotten that. Like, did they know that was a Sherlock Holmes story, or was it just the hounds, you know, like 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea? I don't know. It just, I would
the
have liked
only,
deeper.
The only ones my kids really got watching this was the Off With Their Heads, when mm-hmm. the Queen of Hearts pops out at one point. That was the only thing they really knew. They, you know, Colin says everyone knows Moby Dick. Nope, not my kids. I have failed as a parent. I, you know.
Also, it just felt like, why did you need to? I mean, I don't know. I guess it's like, did you need? I think the more interesting thing is like going through the genres rather than like having it need to be specific stories.
Yeah.
Because I also thought like, this is an 11-year-old boy or something like that. Like, where's your science fiction? Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah. Right.
There's like more, I don't know, salient things, I guess, that yeah, I feel you could have done.
Fantasy and adventure as presented in this movie feel too similar.
Yeah,
because
totally.
Yeah, because fantasy feels like they're doing Peter Pan fantasy, you know, because she's clearly like a fairy, whereas right. the adventure is pirates. So it's like, yeah, that's the same fucking book.
You're right,
doing
yeah.
two of the same book and then a scary guy that's yeah. actually the Cowardly Lion
and,
because he's
and there was a whole
shadow,
lot
you know?
Of like water-based story. Like, you got Moby Dick and Treasure Island. And I guess even sort of like Gulliver's Travels, also sort of like, again, I don't know. It felt very light. I just feel like they could have went a lot deeper.
Whole story is Alice in Wonderland. Because,
right.
you know,
though,
you got...
that was one of the trivia bits that the movie, the title of the book is Alice in Wonderland in the movie. But the actual title of that book, if you go to, is it The Adventures of Alice in Wonderland?
Oh, sorry,
so mistitled.
I said Alice in Wonderland. I meant Wizard of Oz.
Oh, okay,
Wizard
yeah,
of Oz.
Sorry.
The whole
yeah.
thing's Wizard of Oz. He just wants to get home, and he's got the.
There's even
he's got the cowardly book. He's got the yeah. dumb book. He's got the yeah. you know, yeah.
And I would never obviously the horror book was like a Quasimodo ripoff because he keeps saying sanctuary, but that's not really a horror story. Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde would be, but Like, that's the only... Apparently, I saw in the trivia, too, that there was a Frankenstein image that was in, like, the previews, but didn't actually make the theatrical cut of the movie. That's probably those 12 minutes that we missed making it a feature.
Cut the Frankenstein sequence.
Yeah, because if you give me fantasy... Because I'm a fantasy nerd. Like, obviously, we have the dragon and the knights. Yes, that is clearly fantasy, but that's more like a fairy godmother. So there should have been, like... mice that are talking and pumpkins turn into carriages. Like, that's the sort of fantasy that I think they were aiming for with that character, but it wasn't really paid off.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And like, Long John Silver, I'm not sure if I liked his character design, because shouldn't he have a beard?
I don't remember. I don't know from my reading if... I know, like, Blackbeard and Redbeard were known, but I don't know if Long John Silver's... But I'm from the Southeast. We have a restaurant called Long John Silver, so all I thought was, I'd like some fish. They have really good hush puppies there.
I was also thinking in like story terms, this movie is kind of like, it follows like your basic like Joseph Campbell's hero's journey, but I think like one of the things it lacks is like, really, once Richie's in the world, the only his like low point is like kind of losing his library card.
Yep.
But then they just happen to find it walking on the beach and bring it back. Like, there needed to be a point where like the books got captured and he needed to actually do something to get them back.
Or the library card, there should have been a setup where the library or the librarian said, now don't lose it.
Yeah, it's there wasn't even that.
To,
yeah,
it, whatever. But like, there was nothing to make him think you couldn't just get another one.
Okay, good, because I had that note in my I had that in my notes at one point where I was wondering, why is there all of a sudden all this drama about the library card? Because I don't remember that being something presented as an obstacle of you have to have this library card to get out.
Right. Yeah, no, that's never.
So I didn't just miss it. Okay.
Yeah. And I do think it's somewhat funny. I don't like, it's not like a perfect one-to-one, but this kid lives his life based off all this, not obscure, but this like statistical knowledge he has about how dangerous things are. Mm-hmm. But he's not actually wrong, because his dad does almost die from an accident.
He's a savant. He predicts that.
Then he actually falls on water from his jacket. That's exactly the sort of thing he should have been paying attention to. This whole movie is predicated on the fact that he does actually have an accident that would have been preventable if he had been paid attention. I just thought that was like, again, they set up like this story.
Out for a long time. He's probably concussed.
Oh, yeah. He needs to get a CAT scan. He definitely has a concussion. He probably needs to, you know, be on some medicine, bed rest, that kind of thing. And he doesn't even be doing sweet. Okay. I used to jump shit on my bike all the time. Mm-hmm. That was like a 6-foot ramp. Yep. No, that is too dangerous. Don't do that.
Well, also, he could not have gotten enough speed.
Yes.
From like, he needed a counter ramp to come down to like clear that thing.
And what were they doing that they had one giant pipe and a board? Like what construction was happening? It's so nonsensical. Though I will say, the moment that first scene happened, I'm like, okay, he jumps out at the end, right? I mean, it was such an obvious setup.
It was Chekhov's bike ramp was what it was. Yeah. That was one where when he first encounters the bullies at the beginning, I was kind of laughing with my kids, where I said, well, at least he's wearing a helmet. All the other stuff might not be necessary, but none of those other kids are wearing a helmet. And then at the end, when he decides to jump it on his own, he's not wearing a fucking helmet. It's like,
I know,
you could have at least kept that safety precaution. You exactly. just knocked yourself out for a couple hours. Or
I want you to be adventurous, not stupid. And I don't think we needed the bullies. I actually think it would have been better if they had been friendly to him, like, hey, do you want to play with us?
He's like, no, I
won't. Like, they didn't have to be bullies.
Yeah.
And then if you're going to make them bullies, then they needed to be there to see the jump at the end. Like, it's like, again, I just think it's like a first draft. There's post-it notes on a wall, like, hey, let's do a story. And they just wrote a script based off the post-it notes and never actually thought it through.
Yeah.
I was also kind of struck by this movie is kind of like this like Canadian, I don't know if it was in the States, but there's this Canadian TV show called The Odyssey, where this like kid falls out of a treehouse and he like ends up in a coma. And then he like, he in his dream world, he's like imagining, like he's thrust into this world where it's kind of like, it's not Lord of the Flies, but it's kind of like Lord of the Flies, where like kids run everything and he's trying to like get back and all. Do you remember this movie at all, Sean?
I
or
do
this
not.
Show?
No, I
no?
do not.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm
well,
sorry.
Look it up. But
so we had a thing when I was a kid. We would watch as part of like our home room was called 3-2-1 Contact.
And
it was like a 15-minute sort of like, and they do like science
Contact.
Stuff.
Contact. Yeah.
It's the re yeah, yeah. And, but there was like one segment within that show that was like this apocalyptic future where there was just like a few kid survivors and they were in a library and it's all about how to like we have to figure out how to irrigate our own crops because there's nothing to eat, and so they go to the Dewey Decimal System. I used to love that show. I wanted just that show pulled out so I could watch it because I loved that part of it.
Yeah. So for a movie with a $27 million budget, they don't have very good effects in the live action stuff. I have to say that the dome in the library is a very obvious matte painting. When it all starts dripping, it's like, ooh, 1994, you needed a little more work on that CGI. And what was the other? And even when he's caught in the rainstorm, it looks like they've digitally added some extra rain to make it look like it's raining harder than it actually is. I don't know.
I wonder, because we start on a storm the night before, and then it's bright and sunny when he's sent to get the nails, and then it immediately darkens to another storm. That's why I think all that's metaphysical. I think that's all part of the fantasy immediately because I don't get that weather. I don't know where are they in the world that weather makes sense. I don't, maybe it does, but it seemed weird to me.
Yeah. Well, it's somewhere that has a library that's next to a tunnel in the middle of nowhere. So yes. Nothing has to make sense apparently.
Nothing makes sense.
Yeah. Have we watched other than Home Alone 2? Have we watched a movie on this podcast with Macaulay Culkin in it that doesn't have a treehouse?
Does Richie Rich have a treehouse?
Didn't Richie Rich have like his fancy treehouse?
I would assume he has a treehouse that's nicer.
Yeah,
than
where
my
he's
house.
Like, you want to check out my treehouse? You want to see my roller coaster? You want to play?
Oh, right.
Yeah, like yeah. So if I remember correctly, unless I'm just remembering that wrong already, but yeah, but it's just like. Yeah, is this a prequel to The Good Son right here, where he doesn't want to go up the treehouse, and then later on he's like, oh no. After he becomes a hero, we go into The Good Son movie, and he turns evil out of what he learned in his fantasy land.
The Culkverse. The Good Son is still obscene.
We've got the Culkinverse happening. They're all connected by treehouses. Ugh. Oh, and one really clever joke, and this is one that had my kids looking at me going, huh? Was the point when they enter the horror house and a raven flies by going, nevermore! Oh. And I'm like, okay, you got me on that one, Pagemaster. That was clever. And my kids are like, what? I'm like, it's a poem. He's in the horror section. It's famous.
Just let them watch The Fall of the House of Usher on Netflix. They'll have it down by the time that show's over.
I'll just let them watch The Simpsons, the Halloween and horror episode where they did the whole thing. Yeah.
That might work.
Hey, guys, I need to talk about why.
Okay.
Why does Fantasy's panties drop?
Well, wasn't it pantyhose?
I don't know. It looks like panties to me.
I'm pretty sure she says her pantyhose. She has to untwist them or something. That was weird.
That was so bizarre.
It was just not great.
I don't even know why a book needs to wear pantyhose.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand the pirate get up on adventure, but yeah.
I was sad that there was no. Because I saw it, and I was like, what the fuck? And then I, like, rewound, and I was like, oh, that did actually happen. And then I Googled it, and I was just like, similar to Uncle Buck, the three weird guys in the mail slot.
In the mail slot, yeah.
Like, I'm sad that there's no
explanation.
Real explanation or reasoning why it happened. Nobody's come out afterwards and be like, just a funny thing that we put in, like, just to, for whatever, like, it's just there. Inexplicably for no real reason.
Yeah.
Isn't there a scene where she gets like water shot up her hoo-ha?
I might have missed that one.
I mean, I think it's like it's not played dirtily, but it's like, yeah, like I think it's like right when we first meet her, there's like water gets shot up into her bottom of her book from like the 20,000 leagues under the sea. I think that's around, right around the same time that her pantyhose come loose, is because of the water spout, maybe.
Maybe.
Well, it comes right after like something about like she's making out with Adventure, and I swear he says something like, "Do you want to cuddle?" Like, or, like
get. Oh, just before she decks him.
Yeah, and then she comes out, and then before she goes back in, her panties hose, her panties drop, and she pulls them back up. And I was like, I don't know. It's just weird. I feel like some pervert just put it in for
they were
no reason.
Probably trying to make at least one joke for the adults to go, I get that. My kid doesn't get it, but I get it. But yeah, again, it's
but
just
I don't
kinda,
get it.
I don't get it. It's just like lazy again. I don't know.
Adventure pulled them down and or whatever. He was starting to pull them down. I don't know.
Because you get that joke at the end where Adventure wants a kiss and Hor's like, okay. It's just weird.
Well, there were a couple jokes that I liked. Richard coming up from underneath the Atlas Shrugged book, I thought was a clever sight gag because of how he lifts it up over his shoulders. Yeah. I liked when they get rescued by Long John Silver, or rescued in air quotes, you know, where he's like, let's take a look at your insides. And he goes, red, they're red.
Yes.
I thought that was a funny line, so... Yeah, so there's those moments. I don't have a whole lot left out of that. One of the things that bugged me about the character of Richard is, you know, he's set up to be this big wimp in the beginning, but you don't see a slow build of his character.
Mm-hmm. No, like once he's in the fantasy world, he immediately is doing adventurous things. Like the very first thing he does is jump off the ladder and like grab the like that's like. Level 10 already adventure stuff. There was no build to that. It was like, okay, well, here we are. We got to do these things. It didn't, like you were saying before I just took over, I would like a slow build to that heroism or adventurousness, not just like, well, I guess we're here now.
Yeah. I was going to say, with all his stats knowledge, you would have thought he would have pulled something out about being in water without a life jacket. And
So
this is 1994. This is pre-Google. The only way he's going to have access to all this knowledge is books.
Mm-hmm.
So he's clearly a reader already. He's just a nonfiction reader, or he has like encyclopedias. So I would have liked some sort of touch on that. Like, where is he getting this all this knowledge other than books? Is he like watching the news every night? Like something to explain that. Cause I kept thinking he's got to be a book reader already. So I thought that was a kind of a weird thing.
Yeah. And another thing that I found weird was just the random music break in the middle, where it's like, at no other point in this movie have we given any indication that music is going to happen.
No. That was their Disney moment,
and
it failed. It was so hard trying to be a Disney movie song, and it sounds almost like a Celine Dion, but not quite. It's like an off-brand version of that. It was bad.
Great value brand Celine
Dion. It's great value brand Celine Dion. Delene Sion, maybe.
Yeah. I also love how Richard decides, you know, when he has the choice of like either leaving or saving these books, he decides to desecrate a corpse by stealing all of the knight's gear. But at that point, he figures it out. But that is the thickest Jack and the Beanstalk book ever. Like, who's ever owned a copy of Jack and the Beanstalk that is as big as, like, a dictionary?
I mean, that needs to be part of, like, a whole selection of fairy tales. Because Jack and the Beanstalk is, like, a 9-page story.
It should at least say Jack and the Beanstalk in other stories, then.
Yeah. Something else.
But, yeah, I mean, he uses that beanstalk to escape. And I guess that was another point where my kids got the reference. They at least knew Jack and the Beanstalk. So they did not get Gulliver's Travels or any of those, though.
The Lilliputians.
And, you know, the other thing I didn't get any sponsors this week. I'm pretty annoyed.
I was wondering if there was anything, like the car that the parents were driving, anything.
Well, now I will talk about it, and I will go to Sponsorship Corner.
Cult member.
because this was also a funny observation that I made with my children. Well, always on the lookout for product placements. This week, Pagemaster brought to you by nothing. I tried. But there is one point when he jumps the ramp at the end, when he lands on the other side, there is clearly an old-style BMW, one of those ones that has the two squares on the grill. But you don't see a BMW. But I'm like, I fucking know that's a BMW, right? But also with my kids, when the parents pull into the driveway, they are driving a Ford. But the Ford symbol is, like, intentionally kind of blurred out. Like, it's you can see the F, but nothing else. And my son was convinced that I should include Ford. And I'm like, I don't know. I don't cheat at this.
Yeah, I am faithful to it. Pay them and
that's
didn't
right.
want them to,
yeah,
to
so
use
they,
it.
Yeah, so they did the Greeking of the Ford symbol. Yeah. So it's...
So what was the name of the hardware store that he sent him for nails? Is that a real hardware store?
No. And I couldn't see any brands on the nails. No brand on the fire extinguisher. None of that. None of that. No shoes that he's wearing. Even the symbol on the shoe was blacked out.
You got a movie with Macaulay Culkin coming out. Could they not get anybody to throw him some bones here for something?
Well, I heard this movie took 3 years to make. So maybe by the time Macaulay Culkin was actually properly attached to it for the live action stuff, unless he did that first. I don't know which order he would have gone in.
Yeah, I don't either.
No, he wasn't. He was like Richie Rich age in this movie. So, yeah.
No, he was younger.
You think
so? He was much younger.
Was he? Yeah. So he might have been Home Alone age in this one, and it took them 3 years to do the animation.
Animation takes a very long time, I know that, but longer when you don't have a script, I would assume.
Well, I could cheat and say BMW and Ford, but no sponsors. And this has been Sponsorship Corner.
Cult-vember.
I tried.
It's more like Sponsorship Roundabout. We just kind of went around it and then out. Nothing really happened.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. No, nothing on his helmet. Nothing. Nothing. Nothing.
I guess libraries. That's who sponsored this episode. Classic literature and libraries.
Yeah. The only one book that they name dropped that wasn't like classic literature that you can get, you know, free domain on your e-reader, was Salem's Lot. So they did name drop Salem's Lot for some reason, but I think everything else, even from The Wonderful Wizard of Oz, I think all of those are now like public domain that, you know, you can kind of get them free anywhere at this point.
I did try to keep up with some of the names for a little while. Weren't there just the name of a book kidnapped in like four different scenes? It was just kidnapped, was on the spine of several books. I thought that was weird.
There was the, you know, Arabian Nights, or 1001 Arabian Nights was one of the books. There was, Hounds of the Baskervilles.
Which, again, wouldn't have been its own book, like Jack and the Beanstalk. That would have been in a Sherlock Holmes collection.
Yeah.
I think they also had the Redheaded League, which is also another Sherlock Holmes book that would have been in the collection.
Yeah. I mean, one observation that my kids made is they really enjoyed the fact that, like, all the mountains were made out of books. And so I kind of enjoyed the world that they created.
I'll give it that, too. Like, the books, the castle, the tower were all sort of book-built. I thought that was fun.
Yeah. Yeah. So, again, it was just, it was a movie of good ideas that didn't follow through all the way. They just didn't stick the landing.
I would agree. Yep. Yeah. Good idea. Poor execution.
Yeah. I don't know. I got a kick out of the idea that Captain Picard and Guinan were making out at one point in this movie. I mean, you know, as a Star Trek The Next Generation watcher. So, yeah.
I want to make a Uranus joke, but I'll not.
An Uranus joke, did you say?
A Uranus.
Oh, yeah. I see. You chose the scientific way of saying it instead of the 12-year-old child way of saying it. Okay.
Correct.
Um, I don't know what else to say.
It's such a short movie. I don't think there's a lot to say about it. Like, I mean, I didn't hate it. Like, I didn't think this was absolute awful. The fact that it was short was kind of a benefit, because if it had been 2 hours long, I probably would have hated it. Yeah. But it's kind of like just nothing. There's just not enough good or bad to talk about. It just sort of like breezed by. My kids weren't home, or I would have had them watch it with me. They were out of the house for a while.
Yeah.
So I don't have their perspective, but didn't hate it. It didn't really have a strong effect on me one way or the other, and I'm leaning towards sort of a negative viewpoint because of some of the things we already talked about. So I'd give it like a C. Like, if I was grading it, it's not a failure. It's just not great. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, he comes back to the real world. I mean, he should be getting himself checked for a concussion, but no problem. Like, he just goes home and sleeps in the treehouse. Are you sure he didn't just like collapse in the treehouse? I mean, CTE's a problem. You know, it's
yeah. Yeah, I mean, again, that's another thing where just like a different draft, like, I think it would have been better if the parents had come home and found him reading in the treehouse, and they're like, "Hey, bud, you want to come in?" He's like, "No, I think I'll read a little, like, another chapter before I come in." Like, just having him asleep.
Yeah.
There's no real resolution to it. Like, you have them interact with each other. Have them see that their child has changed. Just the fact that he was in the treehouse, sure, but I don't know. I would have liked to have seen him, like, reading the books that he checked out. Make that more prevalent.
I feel like I wanted to see him climb into the treehouse. Like, I wanted to, I wanted to see him in the rain,
the
rain and the thunder, roll up with his bike, stare down the treehouse, and make the climb.
That
would have been better. That would have been better than just finding him asleep up there.
Continue on after the jump. You know, he comes home, throws his bike aside, and steals himself to climb that treehouse. Yeah. I don't know. And then we're left with, like, the little bit at the end where it's like, well, are the books real or not real? What's going on? You know, because now all of a sudden there's shadows on the wall. Was that actually the plan all along? These books wanted to get out so that they could come into the real world and take over?
Yeah, I think this is infiltration movie.
Yeah, just released them from their prison. He's just released three of the four horsemen of the apocalypse onto society.
Yeah. Because that was the only thing they ever wanted. It's like, if you'll get me out of here, I'll get you out. Like, that's the kind of bargain you make with, like, a demon.
Yeah. He never read the Bible in the library. I mean, could have had some hellfire and brimstone come out of that book. That's for sure. So, well, there we go. I think that's The Page Master. Now, Colin, Michael, on IMDb, it scored a 6.1 out of 10 and has a Metascore of, well, none listed. Just like sponsors, there is no Metascore on this movie, but that's probably for the best, because on Rotten Tomatoes, the critics over there, 21% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 49%. But, Colin, those are just numbers. Like, giving yourself a concussion on the floor of a library. Hit us with some reviews.
Cook-vember. It's like the majority of the reviews I read were positive. I tried to find some, like, scathing ones, but there weren't really any.
I think we've probably got enough of that for...
Yeah.
We haven't gone easy on it.
No. Silver Moon Roses says 5 out of 5 stars. My God, I forgot about this movie. I loved it since I was a child. For the first time I watched it was back in 2010. I was 5 at the time, and this movie stuck to me. But after a few years, I forgot the name completely. This movie is one that you should watch and bring the whole family for it. You won't regret it. I hope you enjoy the movie, because I know I sure as hell did, and I still want to watch it, even as an adult.
Maybe I'm thinking of Inkheart, but the Brendan Fraser one, but that's kind of the same idea, but better, isn't it? Right?
I haven't seen it.
But I've seen that.
I thought that one did an animated bit too. I don't know. Anyway.
Fares Rubio says 5 out of 5 stars. I love this movie. It is pure cinematic gold. It inspires not only children, but everyone to have imagination and reminds you to enjoy life. It's completely underrated and not enough people know about it.
More like fool's gold. Am I right? Come on. Internet high five. There we go.
Anthony Vessa says this movie is the best movie I've ever seen. I watch it 2 times a day. In fact, I've been watching it 2 times a day for the last 15 years. Never gets old. I really love Macaulay Culkin.
What kind of Guantanamo Bay torture is that?
That person needs help.
Prison Mike says 5 out of 5 stars. Rewatching this for maybe the 15th time. This plays as well as an adult with nostalgic kick as it does a new generation of fans. So underrated, it should be criminal.
Prison Mike would know, wouldn't he? Mm-hmm. Hey, I'm Prison Mike. Yeah.
The Dementors.
The Dementors.
This unnamed one is 1 out of 5 stars and says, liked it as a kid when me, my brother, and father went to go see it in the old theater. We were originally going to see The Swan Princess in that theater, but the projector malfunction would force us to watch this film. Seeing a review on this one a few years back, it makes me annoyed to see the former child celebrity shoving his face into the screen and going, I'm better than you. What a loser. Even the soundtrack was trying too hard to be timeless. To this, I say, no thanks. And then last of
just, I kind of want the story of the old theater. Like, yeah. Obviously it's got projectors breaking down and everything. Like, I kind of want a deep dive on the old. Does he now, is there a new theater that he now goes to, or is it, you know, down at the old theater, you know? Like, I don't know, it sounds like a pretty shitty theater. I hope they got a new theater.
Last one, another unnamed person gave it 4 out of 5 stars. I know most people wouldn't find this movie enjoyable, but it holds a special place in my heart. It was one of those movies that was flicked on in class on a rainy day to pass time. While most kids talked over the movie and weren't all that interested, my third grade self was oddly entertained and loved all 75 minutes of it. Something about those little talking books was so cute to me. I love this movie. It saddens me that people didn't enjoy it as much as my childhood self did.
There's your demographic.
Yeah.
Elementary school teachers. Yeah. Yeah. That's who this movie's for. That's why it's so short. You can get it in one period.
It did feel to me like that. Like, I literally was thinking this is something I would have watched in school. Like, this was almost like the perfect length for a school class period, not a full movie. I think you're right. They may have even shortened it to try to make that happen.
Yeah.
That school propaganda. Education.
Yeah.
Cult-vember.
Oh boy. Yeah, so The Page Master. 6.1 and 49 out of audiences, 21 and nothing out of critics. Yeah, this is one we've talked it through quite thoroughly at this point. I mean, it's at least I can take the perspective and go, my kids enjoyed it. My kids told me it was a good movie, and that's obviously who this is for. I mean, some, you know, couple of guys in their mid to late 40s and a guy in his late 30s. I mean, that's not who this movie is for. This is for that 9 and 10 year old that sat on the couch and watched it with me and were curious about every single note I was taking. Just stop paying attention to me, guys.
Yeah. Watch the movie, not me.
Watch the movie, not me. I want your feedback on this. I thought it was a cute little movie. Like, it had some fun ideas, but it was just, you know, we mentioned the flat acting. We mentioned the, you know, not highest quality animation in the world. The voice acting, I thought everyone did a really good job. I thoroughly enjoyed Patrick Stewart's performance and Leonard Nimoy's performance and, you know, some of the others. Whoopi Goldberg was just being Whoopi Goldberg. She was her hyena again. That's all she... But Patrick Stewart blew me away in this movie. Christopher Lloyd, I love Christopher Lloyd, and I just always like a creepy Christopher Lloyd, but... whatever, that was like the only real fun in the live action part of this movie. The rest of it was very flat. And he was, I mean, in the reality of the movie, he was just a weird character. But yeah, I don't know. Michael, final thoughts. I mean, you kind of already said you would give it like a C, but I mean, final thoughts. Well, wrap your head around
this. I like the messaging. Libraries are important. They are public institutions. They should be protected. People should go to libraries. They should check out books, read banned books. Pro library here. Movie,
Yeah. I mean, I think the irony here is Colin said that he had to buy it. He usually gets his movies from the library. And so the library didn't even have this movie about libraries, Colin? Or
it did not.
Wow.
It did not.
That seems almost ironic.
Just a little bit, yes. Colin, bring us home. It was your childhood pick. It was... You're the one with the fondest memories of this because you were the demographic when this came out. So, like I said, with my kids, I get it. I get why this was popular, but
yeah. It's a sad day. This was one that doesn't, you know, it doesn't, it was probably better left not watched again by an adult brain. I think I would have preferred to have just reminisced on it fondly. It makes me, it honestly, after I was done, I was like, I'm afraid to watch, like, other movies. Like, like I love the movie Balto, and I'm like, it came out around this time. I'm like, I'm afraid to watch that movie. Like, what if it doesn't hold up? My whole childhood will come crashing down.
I've had my heart torn out a few times on this show, don't worry. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that's all I can really say about it. I just thought, I still think, like Michael was saying, I think it's a great concept. It's just not a good movie for me at my current age.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough. Yeah. So, if you've got kids, show it to your kids. But otherwise, yeah, if you're over the age of 15, you're probably not going to like it much. No. Maybe even a 50. Maybe a 15-year-old would like it. Maybe. I doubt it. Not these days, not with all their digital beeps and boops and pull up your pants, kids.
That's right. God. Shaking my fist at clowns.
That's right. Well, there we go. That's the Pagemaster, and that's our show for this week. Oh, boy, closing out Cultvember. A huge thank you to our special guest, Michael Ross. Michael, I mean, you're one of the busiest men in podcasting, but, you know... Give our people the rundown of where they can find you out there doing your thing.
So I am more active on Blue Sky these days. I still have a Twitter account, but truly
I need
not
you
friendly.
To send me an invite for that, by the way. I didn't realize
yeah,
you
I've got a
be...
bunch. I'll send you one. But basically, if you search The RPG Academy, you should find me anywhere, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Blue Sky, whatever. I think I'm also on the Mastodon that I never post there. But I podcast about role-playing games. I try to teach people how to play them, maybe expose them to games they haven't played before. I do interviews with the designers and creators. We're all in that space. I also do a podcast about the TV show Smallville, which both Colin and Sean have been regular returning guests on that. It is absolutely a ton of fun. We are just about ready to end season 6. We're going to take a short break as we always do, and then we're going to jump into season 7. I think we're one of, if not the best Smallville rewatch podcast out there. It is called Farm to Fable. I'd love for people to check that out. And then I also host a podcast called Healthy Minds Alliance, which is about mental health education and awareness. It is a part of my AmeriCorps service that I do that. And it's a short form interview with other people who are doing the good work of mental health education awareness in local communities. So you can find any or all of those wherever you find podcasts.
And we can also introduce you as a published author, Michael Ross, as well. I mean, you got
very close.
Your role-playing game coming out very soon. I'm excited to get my copy of that one because I was definitely a fund backer of that one. So,
well, thank you. Yes.
Yeah.
I should have the proofs coming in soon. And then once that is finalized, it'll go into production. It'll be like probably six months because it's such a small order. But hopefully mid of next year, I'll have them out to everybody. Yeah. But yeah, that is very exciting for me. Again, as a library geek, the idea of having a book with my name on it has been a dream of mine since I was a child.
Yeah, for sure. Well, if you like that show, one thing you can do to really help us out, well, just tell people, go and throw up some reviews on whatever podcast app you listen to your podcasts on. You know, it doesn't matter what you say, you won't fix us with your words. Just, you know, let us, just give us some stars. Help us mess with some algorithms and get us up those charts. Or if you want to be a financial supporter, go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne. Become an executive producer of the show, and you even get a shout out like Joshua Blum of the 13th Hour Podcast.
And check out our website, www.IUsedToLikeThisOne.com, where you can find links to all of our podcast episodes and social media pages. Drop us a line at IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com. Let us know what movies you used to like, and then maybe you'll find us talking about them on the show.
music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band, Carter and the Capitals, anywhere you listen to music. I've been forgetting to mention my other podcast. Go check out In Front of the Yellow Line, anywhere pods are cast, if you want to hear more from me. But Colin, we're out of Cultvember, and we're into Christmas.
Jingle bells. Batman smells.
Jingle bells. Jingle bells, Batman.
Ho, yeah, ho, ho, all that stuff.
All that stuff, yes. Yuletide greetings and all that sort of stuff. So, first up, we got the man, the myth, the legend. We've got the big man himself, Santa Claus. We are watching The Santa Claus. I'm pretty excited for that because that's a modern classic, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I like that movie a lot. I haven't watched the sequels, but I am planning to start watching the TV show, the Disney Plus TV show.
I did watch the first season of that, and so now I'm the second one I'm looking forward to. I'm gonna let a few episodes build up before I get into that one, but yeah. So then I can binge them all right at Christmas.
Yeah.
So yeah, into Christmas month. So festive greetings and all that. So I mean, Michael, Merry Christmas, because we're out of Cultvember and into Christmas now. So,
well, Merry Christmas to you as well.
Well, you know, so until next week, I'm Sean Wells.
I'm Colin Stewart.
And over there is Michael Ross. And we will see you next week when we look at The Santa Claus on I Used to Like This One. Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the I got ahead of myself.
It's the adventure.
Hello and... yeah.
Cultvember.